You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Think about your last trip to the doctor's office. Maybe you had been waiting for what felt like hours. And when the doctor finally rushed in, she spoke quickly about where it hurts, ordered a few tests, typed a few notes on her iPad, and before you knew it, you were out the door with a prescription. But what if it were different? What if instead your doctor spent time with you and listened to you tell her your story, asked about your family and your job? And what if your treatment was based not just on your physical symptoms, but on your whole life story? Can listening to and telling stories help make for better health care? Some med schools think so. Programs in narrative medicine and medical humanities teach doctors lessons from literature in the hopes that they will be better listeners and caregivers. Does your doctor take time to listen to your story? How could a doctor, anyhow, with 10 people in the waiting room, ever have time to listen closely to all of them? What does your doctor do? That's what we'll be talking about. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. You can tweet us at SciFry, at SCIFRI. Let me introduce my guests. Nellie Herman is the creative director of the Narrative Medicine Program at Columbia University Medical School. She is also the co-author of The Cure for Grief. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you.
Nice to have you. Dr. Jerome Groopman is a professor at Harvard Med School and the chief of experimental medicine at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. He's the author of several books, including How Doctors Think. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Groopman.
Terrific to be with you.
Thank you. Let me ask both of you, let me ask Dr. Herman first. Do doctors have empathy problems? Do they have problems relating?
I want to say right off the bat, I am not a doctor.
Oh, well.
I am a fiction writer, so that needs to be clear.
I apologize.
From the get-go. No, that's okay. I just want to make the listeners.
Your mother would have been happy to hear.
I actually love that. I get emails saying Dr. Herman all the time, and it's kind of funny to me. But being not a doctor, I actually hesitate to make sweeping claims about doctors in general. But I have heard from the doctors that I work with that problems of empathy arise more and more as, you know, healthcare becomes more and more compressed and stressful and all that.
Well, tell us then what you do with the doctors that are in your med school.
So what we do in narrative medicine is essentially attempt to bring the skills of narrative, so close reading and reflective writing and sort of attention to story in lots of different ways to doctors in training, also not just doctors, all sorts of healthcare professionals, as a way of teaching them to better attend to their patients as well as to themselves, and as well as to each other as teams in the hospital and in other settings.
Mm-hmm. Do doctors have time to spend with their patients listening to stories that their patients may have?
I mean, I think it's less a question of time and more a question of manner. You know, you may only have 15 minutes to listen to a patient, but in those 15 minutes, you can listen very, very differently than, you know, another person may listen. And I think it's, you know, you got to work in the system you're working in. And so, sure, maybe you don't have much time, but there are ways to, you know, listen better, I think. Mm-hmm.
Do you agree, Dr. Groopman?
Well, I do think that there is a problem with empathy. I think most students who enter medical school are very idealistic, deeply humanistic. I think that the system for a while now erodes that. And I agree with Dr. Herman that, or with Ms. Herman.
You could just call me Nellie. That's okay.
You know, that you can listen better, but I do think that the time constraints and also the changes in healthcare are preventing well-intentioned physicians and physicians with the skills to listen from listening. The system is being hijacked by economists because of the crisis in payments. And a typical primary care doctor, and I have one, I have a good internist, but you know, he has to sit and look at his computer screen and check off all of these quality measures and make sure that he fills in a template in an electronic record, and he doesn't have time, and frankly, he doesn't have sort of the cognitive structure to engage me in talking about my story, because he has to fill in the blanks. And I think that is a very negative turn in terms of medicine.
Nellie, do you have to teach the doctors how to be good listeners? Or do they have to know how to listen to your story that you want to tell them? What kind of training exactly are they lacking that they need to have?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily what they're lacking. I don't want to make any claims as to what they're lacking. But I do think that what we hope that they can get from what we are giving them is a sort of wholer view of the patients that are coming to them and to their work in general. Just sort of, you know, I think what the humanities can teach to everybody is a sort of way of seeing the world that is a little bit more tolerates ambiguity, tolerates sort of questioning, and I think that is it's very hard, as you can see. I struggle to sort of specifically say what we're teaching.
You want to teach them to look at the patient holistically.
Exactly. And to recognize that the stories that patients tell, even if it's a very simple, you know, symptom story, right, are sort of multivocal, if that makes sense. You know, it's the patient is coming from a certain place, a certain culture, a certain family, a certain et cetera.
And it's probably meaningful because they volunteered the story to tell you.
Exactly, and they tell it in a very specific way. And, you know, three different people will tell the same stories three different ways. Mm-hmm. So some acknowledgement of that, I think, is useful for someone who works in a profession like that.
Dr. Gruppen, do you expect your internist, when you come for your yearly checkup, let's say, to sit and spend an hour with you to learn everything about you during that checkup?
Well, I think when I first met him several years ago, I wanted him to know about my life, the relationships I had, children, obviously, you know, my occupation, which he was aware of, and things like that. Because I think, as Ms. Herman says, you know, when you care for someone as a physician, you don't do it on a strictly biological level. That person exists within the larger context of an environment of relationships, an environment of work, an environment of stresses, all of which are very relevant in terms of how the individual experiences illness, how the individual uses words to communicate symptoms. Because when a patient comes, they're not wearing a sign, you know, with their diagnosis. And even though the knee-jerk response now is, you know, send someone for a CAT scan or a blood test or whatever, you can often get important information, clinical information, from listening to the person's story. Mm-hmm. And also, I think when you recommend a therapy, you want to make sure that that therapy fits within the goals and values and context of the person's life. And it's not generic. You know, as Ms. Herman said, people are different. There's character that comes into it. And I think we fail as physicians if we don't appreciate each individual story, because we're really not able to help them deal with whatever their malady is in as complete or, as you said, holistic way.
Mm-hmm. You're a writer. You're a physician. You're a writer, and you teach a class at Harvard on medicine and literature. Do you think literature or art should be a part of a medical school curriculum?
Not necessarily. I mean, the course I teach is an undergraduate course. It's on narratives of illness, and there are some students there who ultimately will become doctors. Some of them went work for computer companies or Teach for America or whatever. I think if someone in medical school wants to take a literature course, that's fine. But I don't think it's necessary to learn or to sustain empathy or to learn the skills of really active listening and being able to engage the character of the patient. I mean, it might be helpful, but it's not a necessity. What I think is needed is a system that doesn't just pay lip service to humanism, but a system that really rewards physicians who are role models to younger doctors who really do care about patients, who know how to listen and can teach the kinds of skills that allow for story to enter into the clinic.
You mentioned about sitting at the iPad and and your internist having to write down everything that you're saying and not paying much attention. Do you have any better hope for a different system in the future?
I'm very concerned. You know, I think it will take a while before the people really revolt against this. But I saw in the paper today that, and I voted for President Obama, you know, I'm a good liberal and all of this stuff. But there are 65 quality measures that were mandated recently for these so-called medical homes or these accountable care organizations, which are supposed to be centered on the primary care doctor who takes care of you. There was an estimate that you know, people are just checking off all of these bureaucratic requirements, which is eating up all of the time. And the electronic record, which is very good for safety and medication lists and all of that, on the other hand, there's no free text. There's no way to write a person's story. Everything is checking off boxes and filling in blanks. So there are unintended consequences which are really deleterious in terms of some of the changes that have occurred. And a lot of the policymakers, I think, are relatively insensitive to the individual patient and their needs and their character.
Ms. Herman, would you agree?
I would definitely agree. And I mean, that's something I've heard from many of the doctors that I work with about the electronic medical record, that the lack of area for free text is a big problem for anyone who wants to write the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Not only, I mean, just to add, actually my wife, who's an endocrinologist, and I did a piece in the New England Journal about this, and in terms of story and taking a history and talking to a patient, because of the time pressures, there's a terrible practice now where a lot of the doctors in the hospital cut and paste. So they take other people's notes and they just copy them, you know, on Microsoft Word, and then paste it in as though this is the story. And it's not. It's a cut and paste as opposed to really talking to the person and engaging that individual.
And I think, too, what that does is it erases the self of the doctor as well. So if the doctor writes a certain text and then another doctor copies and pastes it, it's the original doctor's report. And, you know, the sort of selfhood of the person that's taking care of the patient gets lost as well.
We're talking about medicine and doctors this hour on Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Dr. Jerome Krugman and Ms. Nellie Herman. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a call or two in here. Let's go to Melissa in Norman, Oklahoma. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
I hope there are no tornadoes in the neighborhood today.
Not this week, just hot.
Tell us what's on your mind.
Well, I'm a physician, and I went through my residency and training and medical school about 10 years ago, and I just would like to leave a comment that I agree with your guest that idealistically when you go into medical school, you kind of have these rose-colored glasses on, and you have this ideal, you know, expectation of what your medical career is going to be like, and that empathy is there. And I think that's maintained through medical school for the most part, because they teach you, they have like all the humanities classes now in medical school, and they teach you, you know, learning your history and physical and all this, all of that. But then I think as you go through residency, you're trying to integrate, you know, all that, you know, medical knowledge in a short period of time, because you're working 80-hour work weeks and you have all of these things to do. And I think a lot of the cynicism develops then. And once you get out in practice, at least for me, that's when it started to come back in terms of like regaining that empathy, because I'm a pediatrician and I've learned that, you know, taking care of, you know, the little kids and the babies, you know, listening to the parents and gaining empathy helps with taking care of, you know, my patients as a whole, not just only their medical problems, but, you know, caring for them as a whole.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's all.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that. Dr. Krugman, any comment?
I think the arc that she described is true, that probably the low point, the nadir of empathy is during the house staff training. you know.
But is it possible to be too empathetic?
Well, that's it is. One of the worst mistakes I ever made when I was a young hematologist, blood specialist in my training. I loved literature, and I was very interested in James Joyce and had read a lot in college. And I was taking care of this young assistant professor of English who had a cancer and was receiving intensive chemotherapy and was really quite ill and just run over by a steamroller by the treatment. And I saw him, and he had fever and so on, and we would always engage and talk about Joyce and Irish literature and all of this. I really had a deep empathetic bond with him, and I examined him in a very cursory way, and I felt so bad for him that I didn't roll him over and do a complete examination, because it was sort of disruptive, and he felt so punk. And later in the afternoon, I got an emergency page that he was in shock. And he had a bacterial infection between his buttocks, which certainly existed there several hours earlier when I went to examine him. But I had not done a complete exam, and I missed it. Now, fortunately, he didn't die. But it taught me a lesson that it's important to be empathetic, it's important to engage, but you also have to understand as a physician your own emotional temperature, and you have to make sure that you never allow your feelings or empathy to prevent you from doing what is, you know, really a competent job.
Thank you very much for taking time to be with us today. And that's a great story to, sorry. It's sort of a hopeful note to end up on.
Well, thank you, Ira.
You're welcome. Dr. Jerome Groopman is professor at the Harvard Medical School and chief of experimental medicine at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. And Nellie Herman is creative director of the narrative medicine program at Columbia University Medical School right here in New York. She's also author of The Cure for Grief. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For coming in today. And good luck to you in your work.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. And when we come back, doctor and novelist Chris Adrian shares his stories with us. Stay with us. We'll be right back.